This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code GEEK at checkout.
See, now to me, that button's in the worst possible spot. The second button literally makes or breaks the shirt. Look at it. It's too high. It's in no man's land. You look like you live with your mother.
Are you through?
You do, of course, try on when you buy.
Yes, it was purple. I liked it. I don't actually recall considering the button.
Oh, you don't recall?
No, not at this time.
Well, Senator, I'd just like to know what you knew and when you knew it.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the autopilot edition, a chance for us to go back and watch a pilot episode of some old classy or geeky show, talk about how it differed from the series and became what we remember from the series in general. I'm Scott Johnson, he's Tom Merritt, and this week, Seinfeld.
What's the deal with these autopilot episodes?
What's the deal indeed? One of my favorite shows of all time, one of the greatest comedies ever made, the three-camera sitcom, sometimes live audience, sometimes canned laughter series known as Seinfeld that influenced countless comedies since then and launched the career, well, the television stratosphere career of Jerry Seinfeld and crew.
Now, as we say on this and the Current Geek Film Fest episodes, we don't claim to be the foremost experts in the world on these shows or movies, but we definitely have a fun time talking about them. And Scott and I both do the same thing. And I bet a lot of you do the same thing, too, is you watch something like this and you pull out the phone or the laptop or the tablet and you're like, wait, where do I know that person from? Oh, wait. So when did they, why did they do this? And we find out lots of interesting things. We think it's fun to talk about and share with you guys.
Yeah. And I also, one of those moments for me was, where the hell is Elaine? There's no Elaine in this pilot.
No,
she doesn't exist.
Elaine. I mean, this is a pilot episode. So this is the episode they made apparently instead of a 90-minute special. We'll probably get into all of the hurdles that Seinfeld overcame to become a show as we talk about it. But one of the big hurdles was they wanted a 90-minute comedy special, and Seinfeld and Larry David, who developed this, said, we don't think that works. We're going to do a show about nothing. 90 minutes is a long time to sustain nothing, so we're just going to give you 20 minutes and deal with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad they did. There's some misgivings on the set, not the set so much, but like in production. In fact, the head of NBC at the time was worried that it was too New York-y and, in his words, too Jewish, and that people around the country wouldn't get it. You have a whole chunk of middle America.
By the way, that man, Mr. Brandon Tartikoff, a legend, all respect to Brandon Tartikoff, was from New York and Jewish.
Right. From the long line of...
It's one of those things where sometimes I look at something and I may be like, wow, that is white and Midwestern. That's probably too white and Midwestern. And somebody else, like my wife, who's not white or Midwestern, looks at it and goes, no, that's great.
Yeah.
You may be a little oversensitive to the things you're familiar with.
And you got to remember, before this show aired, there was really no such thing as a comedy. And by the way, is this our first comedy we've done here for this? I think it is.
For this? Yeah. For the return under Current Geek, I think it is, for sure.
I think for the old one, we may have done something here or there, but... Yeah,
so
this feels good because it feels like a classic and worthy of discussion. But
I checked, though, and we had not done Seinfeld under the old version of autopilot.
Oh, yeah. So. Trust me, everybody. We check this every time now.
Yeah, we do. We learned our lesson after doing Lost twice.
Yeah. Some people have a conspiracy going around that we did Lost twice because we're part of the Lost.
Some people consider
world.
Highlander a comedy. But we did Highlander. We did T.J. Hooker.
Yeah. That's kind of
Futurama.
A comedy.
We did Futurama. That's definitely.
Oh, right. And we did do that special He-Man Christmas special, which is probably not intended to be as funny as it was, but it's pretty funny. But anyway,
We did Puchinsky.
Yeah, that's right. That show no one ever heard of. And we totally did Puchinsky.
Yeah.
So it feels good to be doing this one. But what I was getting at is there before Seinfeld, it's hard to name another observational style comedy. Because really that's what this was. It was taking Jerry's stand-up and clearly the stand-up and work of Larry David and taking that into a realm that hadn't previously been shows about just stuff that happens every day. And yeah. So this is really unique in that way. Now, it sounds trite to say it now because we know what it was and established itself to be. And there have been plenty of shows to come later that would borrow from that and perhaps build on that. But it was kind of a weird idea in 1990. Was it? What's our dates?
1989.
89. Actually.
Our premiere date is July 5th, 1989. We don't get episode 2 until May of 1990.
Wow.
So this is definitely burying a pilot that they did not intend to turn into a series. They looked at it. They said, this is no good. They wrote a memo about it. They put it on the day after July 4th on 1989. Yeah. And it got such critical acclaim. Critics were like, wow, why'd you bury this? This is pretty interesting. This is different. It's new. It's cool. It's fun. That they went ahead and approved 4 more episodes. So season 1 is only 5 episodes long.
Yeah.
And apparently that was because they were only able to scrape together money from other development projects. They got the approval, like, all right, fine, you can make a few more episodes, but you guys got to find the money for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they scraped it together from other budgets at NBC and put those 4 episodes on starting May 31st, 1990. So almost a full year between the pilot and the second episode.
And that experience that they had with NBC, with Tartikoff, with other executives would form the basis for, was it season 4 or 5's storyline where they go pitch a show and they kind of make a fake version of their show and nobody thinks it's going to work and they got to scrape it together and the ratings are terrible. I mean, they kind of went through all of that. The ratings for this pilot were really bad.
I mean, they buried it. Yeah. They put it on a day when they knew nobody would watch, didn't promote it. Like, no surprise.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. And I remember it being... I had seen Seinfeld on stage like a year before this at a university. He did a concert up at the University of Utah. We drove up there, loved it. It was great. Already a fan from his Letterman and Carson appearances all through high school. So I was already kind of in on this guy named Jerry Seinfeld. But I didn't know anything about the show coming up. So when I heard about it, I was all in. It felt like one of those, it's like when Snakes on a Plane came out in theaters. We all knew about it because we were on the internet and we were all paying attention. But the rest of the world had no idea. And I have to imagine this is kind of how it felt for Seinfeld fans like myself. We were super stoked. I think I would have been, 19 then? It was real jazz to see what this show would be. And then they aired this little thing. I saw it. I went, I got to see more. And then I didn't see anything for like a year, like you said, 1990. And then they came back and a lot of stuff had changed. Things had been tweaked. Stuff got moved around. My favorite thing I found out about this thing while it was early in development is all of the different names it went through. It was at one point called the Jerry Seinfeld Chronicles or just the Seinfeld Chronicles.
Yeah. It was the Jerry Seinfeld Show, but that was considered to be too similar to the Gary Shandling Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it got a lot of comparisons by the critics when it aired to the Gary Shandling Show. Good News, Bad News is the actual name that it goes under now if you look it up like in most listings, although it's sometimes referred to as Pilot.
Yeah.
Which is confusing, not because it isn't the pilot, which it is, but because there's another episode of Seinfeld called The Pilot.
Right. Right. There's also a bunch of old scripts Larry David had. And if you look at that, there's some pictures of them online, but they simply refer to the show as Stand Up. So maybe at some point they were going to call it
like
that.
Like a working title or something.
Probably. Yeah. Here's
One thing I noticed about this. And I didn't actually go back and compare, but you have told me that Seinfeld is generally on in your house. Like
almost
some
always,
episode
yeah.
or another, right?
We love it, yeah.
I felt like there was a lot more of the stand-up stuff in this episode than there was on an average episode.
Oh, way more. Like, not even comparable. I mean, there were still, even the early season, especially season 1, which, like you said, was shortened, they all had more stand-up overall than the rest of the series would see in terms of, like, those interstitial stand-up bits. Most of the seasons he'd start an episode that way and often end it, but none of this in-betweener stuff really lasted throughout the show. And in the final season and a half or so, maybe even more than that, maybe 2 full seasons, they didn't do any of that. They just dropped that cold open stand-up stuff completely and just went straight 90s sitcom and went right into it. But
did they not? I thought they always had it at the end.
They always had it at the beginning. They always had and at the end, but when they changed it, they stopped.
They got rid of it.
The whole sandwich changed, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I remember feeling that change and going, "Ooh, weird." really, we're not going to do that anymore. Just not even refer to it. And it's not that big a deal now in retrospect, but at the time I thought it was kind of a big whoop to change that around. In the case of this pilot, though, this thing's exploding with stand-up. It's constant. It's almost like they were doing, reminds me of Louie, the show Louie, where that, you know, it's more, that thing's more serious. There's no laugh track. It's also a comedy, but there's these, you know, points of like he's at work and he's doing stand-up, and then they just film it like a stand-up concert, sort of. That's how this felt, and I think they really were going for that in the beginning. They even have like the credits fade in and fade out at the beginning in a way that they didn't stick to. Like lots of,
and there's a couple of different versions of this out there too. There's the version that actually aired, it has some different graphics and music than the version you'll get if you just go watch it off DVD or off Hulu or something.
You want to hear this? I got some something for you here. Check this out.
Oh yeah, let me hear it.
All right, so here is the normal intro and music. Okay, so this is what we're used to.
Do you know what this is all about? Do you know why we're here? To be out. This is out. And out is one of the single most enjoyable experiences of life. People, you know how many people talk about, we should go out? This is what they're talking about. This whole thing, we're out.
Okay, it's got the usual, yeah, all that, and a little thing at the beginning with the whatever that sound is. Sounds like a tambourine or whatever. This is what, and it was at the time, the clip I found was called The Seinfeld Chronicles. This is what it sounded like then. The music is completely different and kind of terrible, but here it is.
Do you know what this is all about? Do you know why we're here? To be out. This is out. And out is one of the single most enjoyable experiences of life.
Here's the ending. So this is the very end of the show. See how different this is.
Wow.
I think that's really funny.
So that was composed by someone named Jep Epstein. And the bass synthesizer music that we're used to was composed by Jonathan Wolf.
Ah, two very different dudes, apparently.
Apparently. Because that original music sounds like Miami Vice.
It totally does. It reminded me of that Jan Hammer kind of era of 80s music, which I'm not entirely opposed to or anything. And it was 89 after all. But yeah, like I think they made the right move, went with something that would become iconic. I mean, maybe we had to associate the show with it before it became iconic. And to be honest with you, and this is coming from a diehard Seinfeld fan, love him, love his show, love it, love it. But in the last few years, they relied on that theme too much to tie too many B stories together. I'm not a big fan. There are moments in the final two seasons that are incredible, but there are lots of bad episodes and lots of episodes that are just so rapid fire and maybe even funny, but it's just, you know, every 5 minutes, and then they're in another building. Yeah. And now they're in another building and they're talking to George's dad and then, and they're somewhere else. And they really started to like use that as a crutch later on, which is a little bit weird, but for most of the series, that became the theme we knew. And this other thing, I mean, that's just, it's freaking terrible.
Now, when did you first become aware of Seinfeld?
Well, I knew about the pilot.
You did. You actually knew about that, because I did not.
I knew about
the pilot, I had no idea.
It's only because I had just gone to that concert and seen his stand-up, and I was obsessed with him on TV, so I was in the zone.
You were in the know.
Yeah, and I knew about it from, I think, a Letterman visit or something. Showed up on Letterman. This is back when he was at NBC. It was Late Night with David Letterman. Talked to him about it. Said, yeah, it's coming up or whatever. I can't remember even how early this was that he was there. He did some stand-up. Then he went and sat on the couch and talked about it. And I remember my friend Bill and I, next day at school, were just like, dude, did you hear? He's the guy that went to the concert with me. And we were so excited, just so into this. In fact,
wait, next day at school, you're in college, right?
No, I was, this would have been, let's see, 89. Oh, no, you're right. I wasn't even in school. I was like hanging out like a loser in 89.
Summer, okay, yeah.
And I had,
I was working at Pizza Hut when the pilot aired. I didn't.
This is to show you how into it my friend Bill was. Just the other day, he sent me a copy of this Letterman, the Last Giant of Late Night book. I mean, that's how obsessed we were. We're even doing it now in our 40s. But anyway.
I, as the editor of my high school yearbook, titled our senior year high school yearbook, Late Night with Greenville High School.
Okay, so I'm going to forget for a minute that was just handy someplace, like always. But that's awesome. Oh my gosh, dude. And
we used a unlicensed photo of Letterman on the opening page.
Of course it wasn't. That's amazing. was on the yearbook staff too. That's too funny. I didn't know this about us. That's crazy. Anyway, so what was my point? Oh yeah, so I was primed for it. I was ready for it, and that's when I first heard about it. Now, did I know it was going to be a phenomenon and become the most watched comedy in the history of modern television or any of that stuff? Like, no, I didn't think that. I thought it would be this quirky thing that would, you know, a niche audience would get into, but it would become so much more than that pretty quickly.
So I did not know about it when the pilot came on. Mm. So this, it would have been between freshman, sophomore year at college, right?
Yeah.
Season two was 91. I think I missed out on that whole season because I remember learning about it when I was at Chris Condry's house with her boyfriend, Dan. He was showing off his next computer that he was very proud of.
Wow.
That he ran Mathematica on. And then Chris started going, oh, have you guys watched Seinfeld? And me and my girlfriend at the time were like, oh, no, I don't think we've caught that. And they're like, oh, my gosh, you have to watch it. It's hilarious. This probably would have been summer of 92.
Yeah.
So it would have been like mid to second season, I guess, or mid third season, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then so, I mean, you couldn't really binge. You had to wait for reruns if you wanted to catch up.
Yeah, no, there was no catching up. This was back in the days where you're like, you didn't catch up on stuff. You just started watching it.
Yeah, you just showed up on Thursday night and watched it or not. And
maybe, I think maybe Chris might have taped a few on VCR that we could have borrowed, but I don't even think we did that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, she did. She played some for us. Yeah. They're like, you got to watch it.
Now, if this show's on as much as it is in my house, and if you're, like, my kids are totally into it. Kim and I love it. If we see something like, I don't know, like a horror movie one night or something, and we're like, oh, we needed just a palate cleanser, we'll watch Seinfeld. That's kind of the thing. It's that or Futurama or something like that. Usually Seinfeld. So this thing will spin up and we'll watch it. If you watch a lot of it and then you go back to this pilot, oh, man, like the restaurant's different. His apartment's pretty different.
Kramer's, I mean, the apartment layout is roughly the same, but the trim's different. He's got this weird, like, I don't know what you call that kind of window there. It's like a box window instead of just normal windows.
Yeah. George is less, what's the word? He's less crazy and kind of freaking out all the time. And he's a little sadder,
He's a little more like a jaded friend where Jerry's the crazy one. And he's like trying to, like, you know, come on, man.
And they're in like a laundromat doing laundry. That never happened again. That never happened again in the entire history of that show. They were never
Although
in that laundromat
again. Was very clearly them trying to establish this is the show. The show is about normal everyday situations. Yeah. The show is not about, you know, a conceit. It's not Cheers. It's not Cosby Show. It's just about nothing. It's about normal. And putting it in a laundromat really, really drove that home because you had the people in the background making faces and reacting. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is a laundromat. I get it.
Yeah.
Also, I felt like George was much more like Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm in this episode than he is in future episodes of Seinfeld.
Yeah. You always hear that, right? You hear like, George is roughly based on Larry's life.
Well, Larry was supposed to play him. Right. Seinfeld wanted Larry to play him. And Larry's like, no, I don't
want
to do that.
Yeah. He didn't want to do it until on Curb, that episode where they get the kind of reunion thing and then they ended up having to play the George part because George wouldn't play it. That was pretty great. That's another funny thing. I would have normally been audience number one for Curb, and it came and I just kind of forgot about it. Wasn't a big HBO guy. Just went years without it. I unplugged very early. So while he's making new episodes, I'm not seeing cable. This is before HBO Go and Now and all that. And, I only caught up in the last year or so, like finally got to all those episodes. That was like 6-7 years worth of stuff, plus a huge gap between when they stopped doing it and when they started doing it again. So
yeah.
I feel like in a weird way, it's been a renaissance for me to kind of get the Larry David end of this thing in a way that everyone else.
Those Seinfeld reunion episodes on Curb Your Enthusiasm are just.
Oh, they're amazing.
They're treasures.
They really are.
It's the best way they could have ever done a Seinfeld reunion ever.
It would have been, I agree. It would have been a bad idea to do it like, you know, Mayberry 50 years later and have all these old actors show up and try to pretend like they're still, you know, the Andy Griffith show. Like, you can't do that very well in these days. Now, in the age of, I don't know, Netflix and Hulu and all this other stuff, maybe it's more possible today. Roseanne's
Everything's coming back, right? Yeah. Roseanne's the perfect example of that. It's like people who were dead in the original series are back, and they just like, you know, like, hey, why y'all think I'm dead? I'm not dead. Here I am.
Right.
I'm good.
Right. The Full House and everything else. Like, everybody's figuring out a way to do it today.
Everything's coming back.
But back in the day, this was hard to do. And back in the day, I mean 10 years ago even, it was hard to do. So I'm not surprised they didn't try to do it for real. But I couldn't get it out of my head. Speaking of the restaurant, they're him and Jerry, and they're talking. The clip at the top of the show was from that. First words spoken in the thing that weren't stand-up. This waitress, I am sure, and I have found some supporting evidence, I am sure they were trying to see if she was maybe a regular. She was going to be something big.
She was supposed to be, as far as I know.
Yeah. I definitely got that impression watching it. And
one of the problems was they realized that having a waitress be the regular female meant that you'd have to come up with reasons to interact with her outside of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And that would cause story calisthenics, basically.
Yeah.
Other reasons that are batted around is that they didn't think Lee Garlington had enough sex appeal. So they went with Elaine.
It happens.
With Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Lots of shows do this. In fact, Autopilot, if it's taught me anything, back when we were doing the show on the regular, you would find almost every pilot had someone in there that was just poof, gone the next time you saw the show.
There's also a rumor that Lee Garlington rewrote one of her scenes and Larry David kind of was bugged by that. Maybe that. My guess is all of these things probably have a kernel of truth in them. Because usually when these decisions are made, they're made by 1,000 cuts, right? It's not usually like, I mean, sometimes things are like one thing, that's it. But a lot of times it's like, do you think that it's a good idea to have the only female character be in the restaurant? That's going to cause problems. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, I mean, the test audience, they didn't react to Lee as well. And maybe we could get Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She's available now. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, sure.
Well, I can totally see a scenario where that plays out.
It's so funny because this cast is so perfect for what the show would become once they kind of got everybody all together. That doesn't happen very often. Like, that's really hard to do. And have a show that is so looked forward to and so popular in the way that it was and have these characters mesh so perfectly is really hard to do. So to know that they stumbled around a little bit in the early goings is not a shock. I mean, all
most
shows
do. Well,
that's
so weird. It's like, okay, we're not in Monk's Diner. We're in the Pete's Diner, right? Yeah, so it's kind of weird already. Like, well, we're not in the right diner. But that conversation between George and Jerry, I mean, it really felt like the entire run.
Yeah.
Like, you could have put that in any episode and it wouldn't have stuck out to me. They nailed that part. That was the magic. All the other stuff around it felt even weirder in relation to just how normal that one felt.
That's why I like this joke so much I'm about to play you. This is one of my favorite Seinfeld jokes, even though it's kind of subtle and it happened in the first episode when things were a little weird. But here's a joke he makes that I always have liked.
If you know what happened in the Met game, don't say anything. I taped it. Hello.
I love the idea of answering the phone that way when you're trying to see a thing that maybe a whole lot of people have seen. I feel like tweeting this way. I feel like every tweet should be, I haven't seen the Oscars yet. Don't say anything. Anyway, my dog, go on to your whatever your inane.
I haven't finished Lost in Space yet. Don't say anything.
Well, have you started that, by the way? How is that new thing?
I've watched the first episode, yeah.
Heard good things.
Yeah, it was real good. Rather surprisingly good.
Yeah, because that movie they made, stinker. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I love that joke. I think that I think you're right to illustrate what you're saying. They nail that stuff. It establishes the template moving forward for their relationship, for Jerry's kind of humor. Kramer would change a bit, but still pretty weird.
A bit. you mean Kessler would change a bit.
Oh, yeah, Kessler would change.
I mean, Michael Richards' performance was pretty close to what we would get to know, but they call him Kessler, which apparently, and I don't remember this, but I read this, in a flashback to the original episode, they play the clip where Seinfeld calls him Kessler, and they explain it away as like being his middle name or something.
Right. No, they do. They do that in the finale. It's after the credits.
Oh, it's in the finale.
In the finale, they go back and change their hair, and it's the day Jerry moves in, which is super weird. I remember that. Now, apparently, it went from Kramer to Hoffman to Kessler and then back to Kramer. Kessler's the closest they got to a stick. And in the draft of the script, Kramer's name was changed from these. NBC felt that using Kramer could cause some legal issues, Since the character is based on Larry David's real-life next-door neighbor named Kenny Kramer, Hoffman was changed to Kessler before filming, but only spoken once by Jerry while watching the Mets game. By episode two, Kessler was swapped for Kramer, and Kenny Kramer was free to start planning his reality tour. So there's that.
Yeah. It is crazy that they ended up not only basing the character on Kenny Kramer, but using his name. Also, many people besides Michael Richards were considered for the part, including Tony Shalhoub.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, Monk? TV's Monk? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, TV's Monk.
Wow. I mean, you know what? Whatever. That guy had done great work on Wings. He played I can't remember what he played, but he's somebody on Wings.
And he was a little bit of a more Kramer-like character on Wings than obviously was on Monk.
So sure.
We think of him as Monk, but I don't think he was Monk yet.
He might have been all right, but he's more George-like for me. At least, well, maybe because I'm thinking of Monk. And
yeah.
Monk was very George, you know.
Turns out he's an actor. He's not like any of these people.
Yeah. Everyone loves Tony Shalhoub. That guy's great.
Here's another little tidbit about the part of Kessler, a.k.a. Kramer.
Yeah.
Larry Hankin was considered for it. He was not cast, but they later cast him as the version of Kramer in the fictional version of Seinfeld that they are putting together in a later season.
Yes, and that guy, he's in lots of stuff. But what I just saw him in, so it was fun to think about this. I've been rewatching because of this show. Thanks, by the way. I'm almost done with Breaking Bad all the way through. I'm on final season now. Oh my gosh, that's weird. I have watched all of Breaking Bad since we last did an autopilot.
Kidding. You watch Seinfeld all the time, so you won't have the same occupational hazard.
Yeah, that one's already there. I've seen all those episodes a million times, but I just got done with a bunch of episodes that feature that actor. He's in Breaking Bad. He's the one that runs the junkyard that gets rid of the...
Larry Hankin is in there.
Isn't that cool? Huh. Yeah, guy's very versatile, it turns out. But still big, lanky, weird-looking dude. But I could totally see him as Kramer. I'm a little surprised that they didn't go with him. But apparently, in the end, they made all the right choices here. I think that who we got as Kramer is so iconic now. You know, take away the real-life issues that happened with him.
I guess Larry Hankin resembles Kenny Kramer more so than Michael Richards. But they'd worked with Michael Richards on Fridays, and they just liked his performance. They liked what he did. A lot of people don't like Michael Richards now, but back then they did.
I like him more after the Curb Your Enthusiasm Seinfeld episodes, because there was this great moment. If everyone doesn't know about what happened on stage, you have to go look all that up. I'm not going to explain it here, but there's a part of that season where I always forget the guy's name that lives with Larry. That comedian is so funny. Anyway, he goes to the door and he's dressed like Louis Farrakhan. So he's got like the same kind of suit. He thought he was just looking good, but he looks just like Louis Farrakhan. He shows up at the door and Kramer opens it and he's playing Michael Richards, playing himself. And he says something to the effect like, "That was years ago. I thought you guys forgave me." And you know, like freaking out, completely self-effacing. Very, very funny. If you guys have not seen that Curb, you should. And in my mind, it helped me come to a better place with Michael Richards post that controversy. Mm-hmm. It's worth seeing for that. But anyway, so that's your team, but still no Elaine. It also was said here that a whole bunch of people tried out for the George character. He was originally supposed to be called Bennett, and he was going to be a short, stocky, bald man, but always, you know, that was always the plan. But in the first thing, he was supposed to be a fellow stand-up comedian named Bennett. And it was going
to
be
a little aspirational for Larry David to make his character also a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. I mean, Larry did his share of stand-up, but he's famous for like having problems up there on stage. Like, there's a story where I heard this on NPR or something. He's up on stage and he looks around at the audience and he doesn't like them. He decides he doesn't like this audience. And he just turns around and leaves, like just gets off the stage. It may have been Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee on that one. He talked to him. But he's just such a curmudgeon that, I mean, I honestly, at the end of the day, if George is supposed to be the Larry stand-in, he's a good one, you know, like he did a good job.
He's a softer version of Larry. If you think of Larry from Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? Like, you think of George as being annoying. If you watch Seinfeld, then you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, you're like, whoa, that's George times 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could have been way more George like. To the point where now when I go back and watch Seinfeld, I feel like George is almost, I don't know how to put it. Like, it's like a pale imitation now. I'm like, oh yeah, no, he's not nearly as bad as Larry. He's not nearly as awkward and uncomfortable and putting people in horrible situations, even though that is what George does throughout the series.
That's a great.
I guess Brad Hall was up for that part.
Yeah.
As well as Nathan Lane.
Yeah, Brad Hall, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's husband, was up for the job. Yeah, and you mentioned a couple others. Who else? There was somebody else. Oh, Nathan Lane. Did you say Nathan Lane?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, Nathan Lane in there. He could probably have pulled it off. He'd have been all right, I guess. But that's the interesting thing about the show. We hear these names now, and they all went on to do other stuff, and so we think it'd been weird that they were going to play that part. But at the time, these kind of were unknowns. We didn't even have Lion King yet for Nathan Lane. Like, he was just sort of dude on stage that did stuff for Broadway, but that was it. So who knows what that would have done to their careers. It may have ended them. Some of these guys haven't gone on to do much more. Both Michael Richards and Jason Alexander didn't have explosive careers after this. They tried, but it didn't really work out. There was a Kramer spinoff that ended up getting scrapped. And
yeah, it was never shot, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. It got scrapped before they even did it. There is not even a pilot for that, right? I don't think so, anyway.
Well, if there is, I'm unaware of it. And it certainly never made it to air, right?
And if there is,
it was no Joey. Let us know, though.
Yeah. We'd like to get our hands on that bit of clandestine information. Hi, guys. Going to take a minute out of the show right now and talk to you about our friends at Casper. Casper mattresses are designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple memory foams for a quality sleep surface. Just the right sink, just the right bounce. I love to sleep, and Casper helps me do it. They're revolutionizing its line of products to create exceptionally comfortable sleep experiences one night at a time. Breathable design helps you sleep cool, regulate your body temperature throughout the night. They're not just any old mattress company, you know. Offer a wide variety of products to ensure the overall better sleep experience. They're all made here in the USA. Buying a Casper mattress online is super easy. Order it online, delivered to your door in a compact box. You get free shipping and free returns in the US and Canada. That's pretty awesome. And a 100-day risk-free trial. We spend a third of our lives on a mattress. It's pretty important that you truly sleep on a mattress before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. I love our Casper. You're going to love yours. I just sleep better. Like, straight up. It's more sound. That's what you want, your sleep experience. Get $50 toward select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use that promo code geek at checkout. Again, that's $50 toward select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek, and the promo code you use at the end is geek. Terms and conditions may apply. $50. Oh, it's such a good deal. Go check it out. Casper, they're awesome. They didn't have the kind of... They ended up getting Star Trek'd a little bit with their roles. You know, a little bit of typecasting happened. Hard for Kramer and for George to find work past this. That certainly wasn't
true. I've seen Jason Alexander in things.
Oh, sure.
Right? Like,
sure.
He shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's currently in Hit the Road.
Yeah.
And he was in Trip Tank and The Grinder. So he's worked consistently. He just... never did anything on the Seinfeld level.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
There aren't that many things on the Seinfeld level, though.
Honestly, you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the only one that came close.
With Veep.
I shouldn't say close. Veep is a genuine, huge monster thing. Before that, though, what was that thing called? She had a couple other sitcoms. They did okay, right? They were all right. I can't remember the names of them. But that thing really took off for her. She was on SNL. She had all kinds of other experience. But George and Kramer didn't really get to go anywhere, and it kind of always bummed me out. So I wonder, you know, if Nathan Lane would have gotten the job, or some of these other guys would have gotten Kramer's job, would they have found the careers they ended up finding by going another direction? I don't know.
Yeah, is it the thing that makes the person, or is it the person that makes themselves?
Ah,
that doesn't make any sense.
That's some deep talk right there. But it is
New Adventures of Old Christine.
Oh, right.
And
right.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus has been in a bunch of movies. She was in Arrested Development. Mm-hmm.
She was great on there, by the way. Great guest role on the rest of development. Fantastic. Yeah, so like, it's not like they all did fine. I mean, Michael Richards had his thing, but they all did okay. What is fun, though,
honestly, what did Jerry Seinfeld do after this? I mean, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is probably the next biggest thing, as far as I know.
Yeah,
right?
He did the B movie, and he was in a documentary called Comedian, and that's about it. I think he peaked.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's really hard to follow up a show that is as monster of a hit as Seinfeld.
Yeah,
like we kind of look at it as like, these folks did this amazing thing, and then they just didn't keep doing amazing things over and over again. But it's sort of like saying, well, we set the bar way up here, and they just, you know, they didn't win an Olympic gold medal every year. Mm-hmm. I know the Olympics aren't every year, but they should have.
Yeah. Well, in our house, we play Seinfeld bingo, and here's how it works.
Okay.
We forget about the main cast when we play this game. We just look at supporting characters, people sometimes who only showed up once or twice in the season or the series at all. People like Bryan Cranston, who played Dr. Whatley, the dentist. Mm-hmm. Fantastic role on Seinfeld. Always funny, always interesting, always a little creepy. Fun to see him go on to be Bryan Cranston. Other people in there, and it's a huge list. Like, you go through that show and you'd be like, oh my gosh, what is he doing here? What's that guy doing here? Michael Chiklis is in this episode, or is in an episode of this show where he A, has hair, and B, plays something completely different than what he would end up doing in the Shield, which was an amazing drama. Lots of little character actor types that show up in Seinfeld and end up going on to other things. I can't remember her name, but she's in all those fake documentaries that What's His Name does, Best in Show and that sort of thing. I can't think of the Christopher Guest movies. Anyway, can't think of her name, but she was Stifler's mom in the American Pie movie, so y'all know who I'm talking about now. Very funny lady. She's the massage therapist Jerry dated, and he was always trying to get a free massage, and she never wanted to give him one. And like, you find these faces and go, oh my gosh, you went on to do what? Terry Hatcher? Are you kidding me? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, people that
Laura Palmer's mom plays Mrs. Ross in five episodes of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Grace Zabriskie.
Yeah. And she is unforgettable in that stuff. There, the episode where they're behind Rusty the horse and he's been eating beefaroni all night. That's the mom from Twin Peaks. She's in there. Like, it's almost every episode, even all the way down to like the
Keith
neighbor.
Hernandez.
Millie, the neighbor the Dick Van Dyke Show neighbor who would always come over with the husband.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
She's an old lady living in the home they all have down in Del Boca Vista in Florida. And my kids pointed this out. I didn't even notice it. They're like, Dad, I think that's Millie. I'm like, what are you talking about? First of all, I don't know why they're way into Dick Van Dyke as well. So I have weird kids, but they're like, yeah, that's great totally show. Millie. And she's, you know, older and living in this place and has this nice, fun little role. So you just have this cool cross section of
Terry
all these
Hatcher's
guys
in a few episodes.
Yeah. Terry Hatcher's. She's the one with the boob grabbing episode in the steam room where she says
Deborah Messing's in a couple episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So all kinds of wacky actor
Boy,
connections.
Bridges was in an episode, two episodes.
Yeah, he totally was. So
this is a fun game.
We love doing that. We love watching it and going, oh, there's that guy that did that thing.
You got everybody has IMDb open. They're like,
I love doing that. I just, for whatever reason, that thing was an early place for a whole lot of people we watch now and think of as like seasoned, interesting actors. And
that is one of the fun things about going back and watching. We're rewatching Deadwood for Cord Killers.
Oh,
and at every episode, I'm pausing and going, wait a minute, who is that?
Yeah.
Hold on. I know that person. I've seen them. In fact, to the point, there's one guy who was in the Mindy Project who plays two different characters in Deadwood, one in season one and an entirely different character in season two.
Oh, it's Dillahunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays two different guys in that. You're right, he totally does. He's in Walking Dead this season. That guy gets work. He's in everything. Just keeps working. And if anyone's not seen, actually this is a good transition. If you haven't
Regis
seen
Philbin.
He was in there. If you haven't seen Raising Hope, this show that ended some years ago. It's a fantastic show. Made by the My Name is Earl people. And that has Dillahunt in it. If you haven't seen it, you should. But the reason I bring that up is I wonder if this is almost like the last great three-camera laugh track sitcoms. Now, you could say, well, what about the new Roseanne? They're doing that. Or what about How I Met Your Mother or any of these others? I know they're outliers, but for the most part, that's kind of stopped. Comedies today, even the half-hour ones, are Arrested Development style. There's no live audience. There's no canned laughter. Lots of outdoor shots, indoor shots. It's not a three-camera set someplace. Do you think a show like Seinfeld could even work today? Do you know what I mean? Like, could it even?
It's hard to answer that kind of question when a show like Seinfeld exists, right?
Right.
Like, because if a show like Seinfeld came along, everybody would say, "Oh, they're just doing Seinfeld," right? Mm-hmm. Because what Seinfeld did was say, "This is what sitcoms have been up till now, but we think this is funnier. We think this is what they're missing. We think we can take the trope of a sitcom, the three-camera shoot, you know, and the regular cast, and twist it."
Mm-hmm.
So to do that, you have to twist it again. I kind of feel like maybe Modern Family is that.
Mm-hmm.
And Modern Family's been around for a long time now, so it's you know, I don't know that it's considered as successful as Seinfeld, but it's got staying power.
Sure.
And it is taken the classic sitcom and twisted it again, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know that you could, but I don't think that's because we've changed so much. I think it's because Seinfeld happened. They're like, well, no, if you want to be that successful, you just got to do something else.
Well, Curb Your Enthusiasm basically is, I guess it's kind of what I'm describing. Seinfeld would sort of be like, maybe a little less, you know, tonally that show's a little more caustic because David's just who he is.
And it's a little more documentary style. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, three sets.
Right. And they're improvising a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's a different take, but that kind of neurotic everyday humor, you know, jokes about people parking poorly and stuff like that is very Seinfeld, and probably a Seinfeld show today would most likely be that. But it's also hard to imagine because Seinfeld for me was, you know, by season four, people were cheering in the audience if Kramer came ripping through the door. Like,
oh yeah.
Out of their minds cheering.
He was Norm, right?
Yeah.
Like it followed the outline, mm-hmm, of what a sitcom should be,
mm-hmm,
but it twisted things. Like, and it's a really good question is, do we even have sitcoms anymore? Like, all the sitcoms I could think of have either been on for 10 years or are reboots of old sitcoms.
Yeah. Well, are they, let's think about this for a second. Are sitcoms, what is a sitcom? Is it require the laugh track? Like, is that part of the definition? I guess we probably look this up, but it seems to me that when I hear somebody say sitcom, I think Different Strokes.
Right.
This thing that we're talking about now, all those kind of shows.
Is Parks and Rec a sitcom? Because that was the last big,
I don't think
like,
so.
Like, revolution in comedies was the documentary style, The Office,
right.
Parks and Rec.
People looking at a camera like it's there, that sort of stuff. Modern Family does that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. If the definition includes those shows, those must be the sitcoms of our time then. But I don't know if they still apply or we just call them comedies now. Like, what does sitcom even mean?
Well, it's situational. It's where you basically say the situation provides the comedy.
Right.
They're trying to make Parks and Recreation work in a small town, right?
So it still works then.
They're a black family that's middle class trying to get by, or he's an old baseball pitcher who owns a bar, right? Like, that's, we have a situation and then we make comedy out of it.
That must be still what they are then. Like, you could say Arrested Development is a situation comedy because it's about situations people
Veep
are in.
Is a situation comedy.
Yeah, but aren't all shows situation somethings then? Situation dramas, situation action?
Well, okay. I mean, that is a real good question. Like, where does the boundary of situation comedy and not situation comedy, right? I don't know. I feel like situation comedy pretty much encompasses anything that isn't a stand-up show or a chat show.
Yeah. So if it's not like...
And why then do we not just call it comedy?
Yeah, it's weird.
Big Bang Theory. Big Bang Theory is the quintessential current situation comedy.
Oh yeah, I should have mentioned that one because that's still, I don't know how popular it is compared to when
I guess Master of None.
Yeah,
Aziz Ansari's Netflix show is a situation comedy that is different.
It's different. It doesn't have a laugh track. It doesn't have, you know, the three camera deal.
Oh, and Issa Rae. Issa Rae's Insecure on HBO.
Oh, I haven't seen that. How
totally
is that?
A situation comedy.
Yeah.
It's a woman who lives in Inglewood trying to get by and make her life better. And she's got a friend who's more successful and a friend who's less successful. And yeah.
I shouldn't say villain of the week, but is her show like a thing of the week?
There are running themes
through
it. Like, she's got a relationship with a boyfriend and all of that. So it's got a story arc for sure.
That's pretty interesting.
But it's not like a drama per se. It's more of like just about her life.
I'm back and forth on whether or not I want to be in a world where the traditional situation comedy is still a thing or not.
Oh, The Good Place.
Oh yeah, The Good Place.
But The Good Place is totally a sitcom. Laugh track.
Wait, Good Place has a laugh track? I thought it didn't. Does it?
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'll take that back. Maybe I'm imagining it. Place. Maybe it's because hell is involved that I thought it must have a laugh track.
Let's see. How Mike Sure is The Good Place. I can't find it.
Anyway, but Good Place is definitely a sitcom. And
sure.
And it's, you know, it takes place on sets. It's not like Curb Your Enthusiasm out and about in locations.
But this is what I just can't imagine us going back to a time where it's like Big Bang Theory is now, where it's people laughing in a studio. Maybe that'll make a comeback, but we've sure seen a pull away from that generally.
Big Bang Theory is the current reigning champ of that classic kind of sitcom.
It's popular, so does that leave room for more of these? Like, are we going to go back to a time?
Or is it a dying art? I don't know. Like, right now, all the new sitcoms that are what you're talking about seem to be reboots.
Yeah.
Will and Grace, Roseanne, et cetera.
Then you had examples like...
coming back? I'm sure that's coming back.
Yeah, I heard some about that. Actually, I heard it is.
Yeah.
Somebody said. So MASH was this weird thing. I mean, MASH came out a lot earlier, but it reminds me of this. It had a laugh track, and that was the studio forcing them to. They didn't want it.
Yeah.
And it's funny to me because that show could have been so much more ahead of its time if they were trying to build something that mimics more of what we have today in these laugh trackless comedies. And instead they were forcing to do it. Now you almost can't do one and be successful if you have a laugh track, unless, like you say, you do a reboot or a remake.
It's interesting.
Or whatever.
When you think about it, a lot of our situation comedy type shows have become animated.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
Bob's Burgers, Archer, other shows that don't have H. John Benjamin voicing one of the characters.
I think we found our bias. He's good in everything. But yeah, that's a good point. I was noticing the other day in an old Flintstones episode that thing was chocked with laugh tracks. And it doesn't make any sense. It's a cartoon. There's no audience.
Yeah.
It's just a cartoon. So why would anyone buy that back then? And all the laughs sounded the same. Imagine Bob's Burgers jokes relying on fake laughter.
Laugh track. No, instead of music. Yeah.
Not into it. I feel like we're too smart now. It's like you can't do a commercial. It's like commercials.
But
you can't do commercials.
Big Bang Theory does use a laugh track.
Yeah, it does. And somehow they get away with it.
For a live studio audience that laughs. I don't know that there's much of a difference between those two things.
Right? Also, I don't really like, I wish I liked Big Bang Theory, and I'm sorry for anyone who likes it.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same apologetic stance. I'm not throwing shade at Big Bang Theory. Just not something that I find myself watching.
It should be for us, but
I know.
I think it's for other people who think people like us are nerds still.
No, but there are people like us that watch it and love it. So you can't. I can't even say that.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the performances are good. The actors are cool. Like, I don't know. I just can't get my head around it. Chat room mentions.
I think our conversation right now, though, is a testament to the power of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Like Seinfeld. I don't want to call it the last great comedy, but it was a titan.
Yeah.
I mean, it pretty much reigned through the 90s and said, we are killing the sitcom formula.
Mm-hmm.
We are, from now on, you'll have to be better than just three cameras and a laugh track.
Yeah.
If you want to make a good comedy.
I think that's fair to say. And I'm really glad we got to do it because again, it's like furniture at my house. It's just always on. And in the 90s, any chance we had to watch it, and when it went in reruns, it was always on. Like Seinfeld is just part of our lives. References about Seinfeld are always being brought up at dinner or situations where something will come up and somebody will go, I can't think of one right now, but they'll come up with something that...
Well, I mean, how many Seinfeld references are still current? It's no Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to try to say that, but... You know, what's the deal with is still something I hear people say, and you know, King of the Castle, and you know, arguing about parking spaces and popcorn in theaters, or all those things are still sticking around.
Even it, like the other day, somebody, Kim, I think, got a book in the mail, and it was kind of hammered, but not from the shipping. It looked like it had been used, supposed to be new, and she pulls it out of the package, and immediately my brain went to the episode where Uncle Leo is in the bookstore, he's in like a Barnes and Noble or something, and he is stealing a book. And it's the one about George taking it to the bathroom. Once it's in the bathroom, it's tainted, so they can't. He has to buy it. They can't sell it anymore. Anyway, at one point, Uncle Leo steals the book. He's a shoplifter. And when they catch him, they swarm him. And he goes, I'm old. I thought I paid for it. And every time I see a book and there's some question about it, like Kim opening this package, I go, I'm old. I thought I paid for it. Like that, to have it be that ingrained in your life is a pretty big deal. Now, I can't speak for anybody else, but I feel like Seinfeld has had a pretty epic impact on popular culture and referencing jokes like that.
The only thing that will keep Seinfeld from being timeless in my mind is that its references are of the day.
Yeah.
Like it's referencing situations that we all identified with back then. Mm-hmm. But as time changes, you know, people don't really go into bookstores as often as they used to. Mm-hmm. There's no comedy in there about the internet.
No.
Nope. Right?
No.
Or I don't want to say there's none, but very little.
Very little. Cell phones are barely touched on in the later seasons.
Cell phones are a weird thing that crazy people have, right?
Yeah, not even in 98, you know, the final year in 98, they barely touched on it. When they did, they were big fat phones, and they weren't. It was not part of the comedy. To reference them, but there are going to be some ones that are universal. Waiting at a Chinese restaurant for your table forever because the guy keeps telling you 5-10 minutes and then you never get in there. That will always be funny and always be relatable, or at least until we don't have restaurants anymore. So I guess maybe all of this is relative, but you make a good point. Like, enjoy it now, you guys, before life and lifestyles change so much that these references are lost to time. Otherwise, you're going to have to be an expert on old-timey pop culture from the 1990s, way back.
A lot of the references, like you say, are timeless, though.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty good.
I think King of the Castle will always ring true for some people.
I am the man of the manor, the king of the castle. What else do they say? The lord
queen of my domain.
Oh, yeah. Captain of my domain.
Captain of my domain.
Yeah, right. I think. That's such a great episode. They're all great. Go watch Seinfeld, you guys. It's on Hulu, all of it. They got a deal to get it all, and they got it all. So there's
that's
no reason.
Actually, that particular episode that we're referencing felt so subversive when
big,
it aired.
Big time.
And it barely warrants a snicker today. It's so crazy.
That's what we do. You know, we see something and we go, oh, my goodness. And then 20 years later, we're like, that was nothing. Anyway, Seinfeld, catch it. It's out there.
Seinfeld fever.
Next week will
be the deal with Seinfeld fever.
That's right. Next week will be a normal show, and a reminder that weekend, the TMS Las Vegas meetup is happening, and Tom Merritt's going to be there. So will I.
Master of my domain.
That's right. Master. Sorry, did I say captain? I meant master.
I will be there. Yes.
You will be there. Justin Robert Young will be there. Tom Merritt, or I already said you. Sorry, Brian Ibbett, me, others. And a whole bunch of you guys are going to be there. We're having a fun meetup, so check us out then. But we will have an episode next week. It'll be a normal, straight-up Current Geek episode.
This is one of the benefits of us being on Tuesday. If we were still on Friday, we'd skip an episode.
Yeah, and I don't like doing that.
Because we're on Tuesday, no problem.
Yeah, I don't like missing them. So here we are not missing one.
Look at us.
Yeah, we're special and fantastic people. Okay, quick note before we get out of here. At the end of the show, Legal Geek does some cool Kickstarter scam stuff about tabletop games. Guess what? I'm here to change all that, because I launched a Kickstarter yesterday and there is no scam within 4,000 miles of my Kickstarter. And I'll tell you why, because I stress about these things to my health and detriment, because I want to do the best job I can for people. Anyway, I've decided to finally launch a Kickstarter where I make my own face cards. Kings, queens, jacks, jokers.
And it's funded.
Yes, and it's funded. It already funded. It funded in about 3 hours. But we have lots of cool unlocks still to go, so plenty of opportunity to grab your decks and get a hold of these things. And don't take my word for it. Go check it out. Read about it. See the video and make your own decision. Also, I made a purposeful effort to make the video short, because I know people appreciate those. So it's like two minutes or something like that. And it tells you everything you need to know. You need to know about what I'm doing with that thing. So here's where you need to go: frogpants.com/cards, and it'll take you there. So it's that simple. You can search Kickstarter for it if you'd rather, or some other way. But the fast way is just frogpants.com/cards. It'll take you straight to it. And we recommend that you do. Tom Merritt, anything else you got going on? You got stuff. What's going on?
Yeah. I'm funding myself a sequel to the book Pilot X. Pilot X was a time travel adventure. And I want to write another book with Pilot X as a character. Now, it will take place after the events of Pilot X, but because it's time travel, hey, you can read them in whatever order you want.
Oh, man.
So whether you've read Pilot X or not, go check it out. It's called Trigor, T-R-I-G-O-R. Pilot X fights his guilt by tracking down a device that shouldn't exist and could destroy the universe. If that sounds fun and interesting to you, there's a couple sample chapters you can try. And we just passed the 50% mark earlier this week. So we are on our way. We need to get 750 pre-orders in order to get it published. Once we get 750 pre-orders, it gets for real published. It gets put in Barnes and Nobles, where old men can say, I thought I paid for it. So please, if you're at all interested, go check it out. Or if you have already backed me, thank you. Tell your friends. Inkshares.com. Look for the book T-R-I-G-O-R. That's Trigor.
Love Inkshares. Go support it. Check it out. Also next month, our next Autopilot episode will cover Lost in Space. In light and in shadow of the new released series on Netflix, we thought it'd be fun to go back where it all started and began. Lost in Space from 1965. The pilot from that will be our next Autopilot episode. That'll be for the month of May. The merry, merry month of May, really.
It is a merry month.
It really is. It's the merriest of months, and we'll be here right here with you. Now, next week, of course, normal show, like I mentioned. Don't forget to go to currentgeek.com. That will be wherever that's where you'll get all the stuff you need for anything we're doing, including our Patreon at patreon.com/currentgeek. Thank you to those who support us there. We really appreciate it. It's going to do it for us, for me, and for Tom, and for you. We'll see you next time.
Go grab your dicks.
Whoa, what?
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week we cover a scam in the tabletop game space that has recently come to light as a lesson in why we all still need to be careful with Kickstarter and other funding websites. Kickstarter has been a force in the tabletop board game development space for years, as many developers and publishers use the service as a pre-order system to fund first print runs of new games. When dealing with funding concepts like Kickstarter, there's always a chance for fraud, however. Borders Tabletop Game Studio served as a primary distributor for the Southeastern Asia market when it came to several popular tabletop game Kickstarter projects, including Anachrony and Gloomhaven. The company also came up with a service where backers from this region would group together to save on shipping, which can otherwise be very cost prohibitive for individual backers far away from most tabletop game companies based in Europe and the US. But these customers started to see warning signs a few months ago when shipping information began to be inconsistent with Borders deliveries, and the company became unresponsive to emails and chat requests. The suspect activity came to a head when one game designer who worked with Borders to distribute in Southeast Asia announced on their Kickstarter page that Borders had received the shipment of the backers' games, but had stopped all contact and had absconded with the product and the down payment for fulfillment. That was allegedly a $20,000 heist of sorts. This led to a further investigation by some companies and project backers, and it was discovered that Borders had collected backer funds for many other projects without actually pledging to purchase the product. That's the definition of fraud, taking money under a pretense that is completely false. Project backers in these countries have started to band together to make police reports and help local reporters investigate the situation. Outside one Facebook update in late March, indicating the board game cafe that this company runs was closing permanently, there has been no communication from Borders. There appears to be at least 10 companies where Borders did not pay them for games sent to Borders as a distributor, and over $35,000 of product not delivered to consumers. While several isolated incidents have occurred over the years on single Kickstarter projects where the creators did not deliver product and absconded with the funds, this collection of activities is quickly becoming the biggest case of fraud ever reported in the tabletop game industry. Unless facts begin to change in a hurry, these project backers and companies appear to be out of luck. The bottom line is, there's always some risk when crowdfunding or investing in a potential game or product. When adding a third-party intermediary like Borders to the mix, that's simply another risk factor that has to be considered. It will be interesting to see if game companies and Kickstarter itself puts in some more protection to try and avoid such fraudulent activity from occurring in the future, But for now, keep safe with your investments, friends. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.